This is CBS correspondent Mike Anderson on the scene where just about an hour ago a spacecraft landed no more than about 30 feet from where I'm standing. We're moving very slowly, very cautiously, trying to get up close, see if we can get our microphones in and listen to what appears to be a dialogue between General Anthony Myers and the grotesque creature that stepped out of the spacecraft.
So you have come to Earth in peace. This is good. Have you come to learn about the people of Earth, our culture, our languages, our science and medicine?
We have come to listen to Boxcar 7-Eleven Old-Time Radio Car.
Well, there you have it. No need for alarm. Just goes to show you the extremes that some people will go to just to listen to the Boxcar 7-Eleven Old-Time Radio Pod. And it really doesn't matter whether you're some creature from an outside planet or just some poor earthbound schlup. Just type in your browser, boxcar711.podomatic.com, and hey, when you get there, you'll see what the whole planet is talking about. The Boxcar 7-Eleven Old Time Radio Pod, where the oldies are still young.
This is Nightline, your open door to people and places, and this is Walter O'Keefe. Nightline invites you to listen in on NBC's award-winning science fiction series, X-1.
Countdown for blast off. X-5, 4, 3, 2, X-1, fire. From the far horizons of the unknown come tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future, adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on a thousand maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, presents
X-1.
Tonight, Target 1. But first, hear this. The presents have been opened, the gifts enjoyed, and in the case of the kids, a few are already slightly battered. But NBC has one more holiday package for you, and it'll be delivered over this weekend on Monitor. There'll be the music of such bands as those of Guy Lombardo and Richard Maltby, punctuated by the antic commentary of Monitor's own Bob and Ray and Fibber McGee and Molly, and underscored by the up-to-the-minute reports of NBC's newsmen at home and abroad. From Friday night through Sunday midnight, Monitor will bring you another weekend of drama, music, news, and interviews. Of special interest to sports fans will be NBC's coverage of the Friday night fights, Saturday's blue-gray and north-south football games, and Sunday's National Football League championship game. Use and enjoy Monitor, your weekend radio service. Yes, start your weekend right with Monitor on Friday nights and stay with Monitor all weekend long over most of these same NBC stations. Now, X-1 and tonight's story, Target 1.
Headquarters of the World Council was in the ruined United Nations building in New York. It took me an hour to reach it, picking my way across the red-colored rubble that had once been a proud city. I was ushered into the office of the president of the council, a former Russian scientist named Melkov. It was hard to realize that only a few decades ago, these people had helped us destroy the world in an atomic war that left less than 100,000 people on the face of the globe.
Come in. Dr. Marin.
Yes.
Good to see you, Doctor.
Sorry I'm 2 days late. I had to land at Boston. It's the only airport operating.
I understand. You have to sit down.
Thank you.
I suppose you are wondering what this is all about.
Very little surprises me, Mr. President.
Good. As you know, Doctor, the Great War of 1960 left very little of the human race. What it did leave, well, 2 billion corpses, 3 continents rotting and unlivable, and every survivor mutating. I believe you yourself have had children who could scarcely be called human. I'm sorry to be so blunt.
Why did you send for me, Mr. President?
Doctor, suppose I gave you an opportunity to do something extremely practical.
Such as?
A chance to prevent the destruction of our world, which took place 30 years ago.
To prevent what has happened? To stop an atomic war?
Yes. Would you do it?
I'd sell my soul to the devil, Mr. President.
You mean that?
Yes.
Doctor, what would you say was the most important scientific discovery of the 20th century?
I suppose Einstein's equation. E equals mc squared.
Exactly. This formula unlocked the atom. Without it, there would have been no atomic energy, and consequently, no bomb, no war.
The formula did not cause the war, Mr. President, nor did the man who discovered it. He was one of the finest human beings who ever lived. A man utterly dedicated to the pursuit of peace and harmony.
Yes, exactly. That is what will make your task so abhorrent, Doctor.
What is this task, Mr. President?
Quite simply, it is the murder of Albert Einstein.
Are you insane?
Perhaps. Only history will record that.
But how in the name of heaven? Albert Einstein died in 1956.
I am well aware of that. In order to commit this murder, Doctor, you will have to travel back in time.
Travel back? You mean that...
I mean that our scientists have succeeded in their experiments. Parachronon penetration has been achieved.
It's fantastic.
Yes, so were atomic energy and rockets to the moon and radio waves long before both of those.
You're actually suggesting that I return to the early 20th century to commit a murder?
Yes.
But why Einstein? Why not the men who took his contributions and twisted them into ghastly and human weapons? Why not them?
Because others would replace them. There are many minds so filled with contempt for their own lives that they would be willing to destroy others, so warped with hate that they might even enjoy the job. No. No, it must be Einstein.
Well, then why me? Why not select some murderer, some fiend?
Because you are a man of the highest morality. This task must not be performed by some twisted monster. It must be done by a man of integrity who fully realizes his responsibility. To do otherwise would be to degrade ourselves and our victim. Come here, to the window. Do you see that covered barge lying in the East River?
Yes.
That barge is the finest laboratory we could assemble. Inside it is the mechanism for complete K-meson penetration, maintaining a stable configuration. In effect, it is a floating time machine.
You've tested it?
It was tested last week. Professor Milton Waxman went back 40 years in time and returned. We cannot afford another test because our energy sources are limited.
Will Waxman accompany me?
Yes. He and one other. Well, Doctor, what is your answer?
All right. I'll do it.
Thank you.
That afternoon, I was taken aboard the barge in the East River. I was left alone in the laboratory to wait for Waxman, the physicist who knew how to operate the chronosphere. Waxman, who is this?
His name is Jom. Jom, this is Dr. Charles Maron.
I know the doctor.
I don't believe we've met.
In my business, I have to know a lot of people I've never met.
Jom is security.
I see.
He's going with us.
To see there's no mistake.
That's right, Doctor.
Very well. I don't suppose murderers can be choosy about their companions.
Before we go any further, here are some clothes that will be suitable to the time and place, which is our destination. Please put them on, Doctor.
While you're changing, I'll give you some background on the subject. Born in Germany, 1879. German citizen, religion Jewish. Became a Swiss citizen after graduation from Zurich Polytechnical Institution. Later migrated to the United States after Adolf Hitler came to power, with a price set on his head by the Nazis. Nobel Prize for Physics, 1921. Copley Medal, 1925. Franklin, 1935. Personal habits...
Must we do this?
He's only doing his job. Go on, Jom.
Personal habits. Works in a bare room with only a pencil and paper. Enjoys sailing, smokes a pipe, never drinks, is a violinist of consummate ability.
All right, I'm ready.
Good. Now just strap yourself into the accelerator seat. Ready? Switch on. The sensation will be something akin to weightlessness, a disorientation and feeling of utter detachment. This will last until we have settled into a new orbital configuration. We will be able to monitor our time segment on the screen before us.
May I ask our objective?
Yes. The Polytechnicum at Zurich. Graduation ceremony in the year 1900.
So young.
He was already formulating the theory of relativity at this point, Doctor. We have no choice. It must be clean and thorough. Are you ready, gentlemen?
Yes.
Ready, Professor.
Hold on. We will begin to whirl until we reach speeds where K-meson penetration is possible. Now.
The sensation was unlike anything I'd ever experienced. I felt bodiless, weightless. My consciousness seemed to float free. I was dimly aware of Waxman at the monitoring controls, but otherwise I remember no sensation. Later he told me that it took exactly 1/2 hour to vector in on the right time and place. That was right after the whirling stopped.
Maron, are you all right?
Yes, I think so.
Jom?
I'm all right.
Where are we?
According to the monitor, our barge is at a dockside on the Lake of Zurich. The year should be 1900. The time is 2:00. We have exactly 1 hour to accomplish our mission. Open the hatchway, Jom. Well?
Fantastic. A different world.
We can't waste any time. The graduation ceremony is at 3:00. Now let's go.
Very well.
Just a moment, gentlemen. Here, take these.
What are they?
Guns. We'll need them.
We stepped ashore. It was strange to see the world green and happy again after our red radioactive ruins. Eventually, we located a policeman who spoke some English. He directed us to the auditorium of the Zurich Polytechnical Institute where the graduation ceremony was in progress.
Don't attract much attention. Take a seat in the rear.
And now, it gives me great pleasure to present the diplomas of graduation to the members of the graduating class of the Zurich Polytechnic Institute. First, Mr. Hans Kindler, cum laude.
Do you see him, John?
Not yet.
Next,
we will have to wait until they call him to the platform.
Mr. Heinrich Weiss, valedictor.
Are you ready?
Maron,
you're the one who must do this. Are you ready?
Oh, yes. Yes, I am. I'm ready.
Mr. Albert Einstein.
That's him. Marin, shoot. Shoot.
I can't do it. I can't.
Give me that gun. Come on. We've got to get out of Dodge. Now hurry.
Another few minutes.
What do you suppose it will be like?
What?
Our world, the one we left. Without atomic fission, I mean.
We'll soon know.
Well, one thing is for sure. There'll be no mass destruction. The people will be there.
The people. Good Lord, there'll be billions of them.
And the trees, the green shrubs, and the beautiful tall buildings. He looked very young.
We're vectoring in on our year. Now hang on when I start the negative penetration. Yourselves. According to calculations, we should be back in the East River on the same day we left. The world will be as it would have been if Einstein had never existed. Open the hatch, John.
Look at that.
The city. New York is whole again. No ruins. No rubble.
Those buildings are magnificent. Look at the trees and the parks. Marin, we've done it. It was worth it. We've done it.
Yes. We've done it. Suddenly from nowhere, an official boat. A police boat. Suspicious of the barge and our parachronin penetration equipment, we were arrested by federal agents. The barge and our time machines confiscated. We were drugged, tortured, questioned interminably. It went on for what seemed like days and weeks. Finally, when they decided that they had had every shred of information we possessed, we were taken before a huge, beetle-browed man who seemed to be a combination scientist and civil authority.
Sit him down. Well, Dr. Marin, we seem to have exhausted the possibilities. Tell me, is there anything you and your companions wish to tell me before you're disposed of?
Disposed of?
A euphemism for murdered.
Murdered? Why, what have we done?
You haven't done anything yet, but you have a thorough knowledge of nuclear physics, fission reaction, hydrogen bonds, etc.
Lord, you mean you have the knowledge we tried to keep from you? You got it from us ourselves?
Don't flatter yourself, Doctor. We've known the principles of nuclear reaction ever since Kretschwood.
Kretschwood?
The Brazilian scientist. Discoverer of the equation E equals MC squared.
I see. Then, why are you going to destroy us?
Because, my friend, you're too dangerous. You know too much. Information could lead to our enemies. Important principles.
Enemies?
Oh, yes, I forgot. You have no knowledge of contemporary affairs. Beneath this building, deep in the earth, there is a thorium pile going.
Thorium? U-235.
Yeah, would be better, yes. Our scientists are working that out. The problem of separation and so on. It's a highly secret project, naturally. We call it only by the name Manhattan Project.
Manhattan? Oh, no, it couldn't be. It's too coincidental. Yet I see it's true. You're going through exactly the same steps. In a year, you'll have an atom bomb. Then soon after, a hydrogen bomb. Then intercontinental missiles, and then...
You seem to have great powers of prophecy, as well as great scientific knowledge.
My friend, did you ever hear of a man named Einstein? Albert Einstein?
Einstein? No. I never heard of him.
Then the futility of it struck me. The futility of trying to place the guilt of all of us on any one man. The futility of trying to do something worthwhile by evil means. And finally, the futility of trying to murder an idea. As they led me to the execution cell, where I now wait, the words of a man whose books were destroyed in the war rang in my brain. The fault, dear Brutus, lies not with our stars, but with ourselves.
Fred Collins again. I'll have another word about X minus one in just a moment. That how you feel, blue and miserable with a deep down cold? Listen.
Every second someone takes it for the miseries of a cold.
Millions more take bromoquinine.
Every second someone takes it for the miseries of a cold.
Bromoquinine.
More people have taken more bromoquinine cold tablets for more complete relief than any other cold tablet ever sold. You could use aspirin or cough syrups or nose drops all day and not get bromoquinine's relief. Bromoquinine works to relieve stopped up nose, body aches, fever, irregularity, the blues, and headache too. Yes, more complete relief for even virus colds. For bromoquinine is the only cold tablet sold with wonder-working quinine and five other medicines health fortified with vitamin C. Remember,
every second someone takes it for the miseries of a cold.
Millions more take bromoquinine.
Get bromoquinine brand cold tablets. You have just heard X minus one presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, which this month features Kill Me with Kindness by Richard Wilson. What would you do if you found yourself in a place where your every whim was granted? Don't worry. You wouldn't be the first to spoil Utopia by attempting to improve it. Galaxy Magazine, on your newsstand today. Tonight, X minus one has brought you Target One, a story from the pages of Galaxy written by Frederick Pohl and adapted for radio by George Lefferts. Featured in our cast were Joseph Bell as Dr. Marin, Frank Silvera as President Malkov, Dean Almquist as Professor Voxman, Al Collins as John, Guy Rep as the official, with Charles Webster. This is Fred Collins speaking. X minus one was directed by George Boutsas and is an NBC Radio Network production.
Countdown for blast off. X minus five, four, three, two, X minus one, fire.
From the far horizons of the unknown come tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future, adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on a thousand maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company presents
X minus
one. Crime difference. But first, hear this.
This is Bill Goodwin. You know, someone once said humor is the true democracy. And that's why we Americans can smile when we tell the stories of the legendary heroes who helped to build our country's great institutions and industries. Like transcontinental transportation. Ever hear of Wind Wagon Smith? Well, in the early pioneering days, most of the traveling was done by ox team. And if folks covered 15 miles a day, they were doing good. That's about the time Wind Wagon Smith showed up with his prairie clipper. The clipper was a wagon without any animals to pull it, but with a sail sticking up from the middle of the wagon. When the wind caught the sail, the wagon took off. And that's where Wind Wagon Smith got his name. He figured he might be able to cover as much as 70 miles a day with the clipper, and folks began to figure it might be a good thing when Wind Wagon pointed out how fast the country was growing and how more transportation was needed to haul people and goods. Then he invited the United States Secretaries of War and the Navy to ride on the clipper's maiden voyage. But disaster struck. The clipper got out of control, the Secretary of War rolled out, and the Secretary of the Navy landed in a cactus patch. But Wind Wagon and the clipper kept going and never stopped. As transportation grew in America, people all over the country claimed to have seen Windwagon Smith. He was in the pilot house of the first steamboat to sail up the Yellowstone. He held the golden spike when the first transcontinental railroad was completed. And when the first transcontinental plane roared out of Kansas City, it was Windwagon Smith, the spirit of American transportation, who waved the pilot on his way. Yes, it is a democracy which lets us tell stories of such legendary heroes with a twinkle in our eyes and a chuckle in our throats. And so long as we continue to laugh together as a people, ladies and gentlemen, we will live together as a nation.
Now, X-1 and Prime Difference.
I suppose every guy reaches a point once in his lifetime where he gets 140% fed up with his wife. Understand now, I've got nothing against marriage. Marriage is great. A good red-blooded American institution. Only, it's so permanent. Especially when you're married to a woman like Marge. Ah, oh, she was a dream to look at. Tawny hair and sulky gray eyes and a shape that could set your teeth chattering. But she had a tongue like a number 10 wood rasp. And a list of grievances long enough to paper a ballroom.
Why do you always upset me in the morning when I've got a headache?
I'm not trying to upset
you. Now, you deliberately...
I'm trying to have my coffee so I can go down to the office and earn a living.
A living. Go ahead. Run away. That's all you've done all our married life. Whenever there's something unpleasant to be faced, you run away.
I'd even forgotten what the unpleasant something was.
Well, then I'll remind you. It's your own selfish, indulgent nature. Staying out till after midnight when I was here waiting and suffering.
I was working. I was at the office working.
I know you were at the office, dear. I phoned, remember?
Well, then what in blazes?
Only you weren't working. Your breath was...
Oh, listen. I fired Miss Carver. She was okay, but I fired her for you. It was her last day. We all had a couple of drinks, that's all. Maybe we just weren't meant for each other. I don't know. If we'd been living back in the blissful 50s, I might have divorced her. But this was 1974. And what with the Family Togetherness Act of 68 and the Aggrieved Spouse Compensation Act of 69, I'd have been an outcast and a pauper for the rest of my life. So you can't really blame me, can you, for looking for another way out? I mean... Oh, come... Oh, hi, Harry boy.
Say, George, I just dug your new secretary out in the waiting room.
Oh, is she here already?
Ooh, boy. I tell you, if I had a secretary like that, the first thing I'd do is go out and get myself an Ego Prime.
A what?
An Ego Prime, a duplicate of myself to send home to the wife evenings.
You know, that's strictly against the law, Harry.
It's so speeding, but everybody does it.
Well, anyway, I wouldn't think of it. It's indecent.
I was just joking, Georgie boy, just joking. Still, it's fun to think about, huh? Freedom from wife. Absolutely safe and harmless. Not even too expensive if you have the right contacts.
Well, come in.
Mr. Fairclough?
Yes.
I'm Jerry Lamont. Your new secretary.
What did I tell you, Georgie boy?
Harry, if you don't mind, I'd like to get right down to work with Miss Lamont. Excuse us.
Why not? Don't forget what we were talking about, huh, Georgie? I happen to know a fellow with just the right contacts for that deal.
Yeah, sure. So long, Harry.
So long. Bye, Miss Lamont.
Bye.
Well, glad to have you aboard, Miss Lamont.
Oh, Miss Lamont is so formal. Mr. Blickendorf called me Jerry when I worked for him.
Oh, Hank Blickendorf?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you must be the girl he, you must have accompanied him on his business trip to Rio.
Yes.
Well, he spoke very highly of you.
Oh.
I'm sure we'll get along just fine.
Well, I feel the same way. I prefer working for a younger man than Mr. Blickendorf, anyway.
When I came home to dinner that night, Marge was waiting with a full barrage. She let me get my first bite of dinner halfway to my mouth and then opened up.
Well, I hear you got a new secretary today.
Oh, yeah.
I also hear she's 5'8 and tapes out at 38, 25, 36 and likes men.
That's quite a spy system you've got there.
She isn't much of a secretary either.
She's a perfectly good secretary.
Well, that isn't what Molly Blickendorf said.
I don't care what Molly Blickendorf said.
Now, where are you going?
I have to make a business call. I forgot.
Well, I suppose it would be too much to expect you to do your work at the office with that miss...
Harry? George Faircloth. Listen, Harry, you know that conversation we had this afternoon? Could you put me in touch with your friend? Yes, as soon as possible. The following evening, I found myself at the door of a dingy office in an ancient warehouse up near 14th Street. A little rodent of a man answered.
Yes, brother?
I'm George Faircloth. Harry sent me.
Oh, yes. Step inside, brother.
I've been told you can supply me with...
Yes, brother. It might be possible. We get quite a few busy executives who are in a hurry. Can't be bothered with licensing a utility prime.
Mister, if I wanted an ordinary utility prime, I wouldn't have hiked up here. I'd have picked up the phone and ordered it. I want a Super Deluxe Ego Prime with all the circuits open. In short, a carbon copy of me, George Faircloth.
Well, just step back here, brother. Fine. These domestic situations can be awkward. You understand, if the feds find out about this, you're in as much trouble as we are.
I'm more worried about my wife finding out.
Ease your mind, brother. We've never had one yet. Except for that little shut-off control in the hair behind the ear, these ego primes are identical with living humans. Now, if you'll just step back into the lab and take your clothes off, we'll start.
I spent a busy 2 hours under the NP micropulse. The artists worked outside taking casts and impressions while the technicians worked inside, feeding all my brain patterns into a Hunyadi pantograph. I came out of it pretty woozy, but a shot of Happy O fixed that. Then I waited in the recovery room until the salesman walked in, followed by a tall, sandy-haired man with tired blue eyes wearing a business suit, who looked remarkably like me.
Mr. Faircloth?
Yes?
Meet Mr. Faircloth, Prime.
So, this is me, Shake George. Why, he even talks like me. I ought to. I've got a dozen Hunyadi tubes in my cranial vault with your speech patterns on them. I'll be doggone.
Nice job, eh?
It's fantastic.
Now, the shut-off mechanism is behind his right ear. Now, bring him in every 2 months for the regular 2-month refill and pattern accommodation.
Let me get a few things straight. How do we change places?
George Prime has remote recall. You just signal him with this transmitter, and he'll come to you wherever you are.
Oh, good. Suppose I call your GP for George Prime.
Okay with me, George.
Right.
Now, there's the matter of the check.
Oh, yes, right here. Yeah, all made out.
Good. Thank you. And good luck.
Okay. Well, let's go, GP. I'd like you to meet the little woman. Half an hour later, George Prime put my pipe in his mouth and walked into the house. I stayed out in my workshop in the garage and listened. 5 minutes later, they were fighting. It sounded so familiar, I laughed out loud. Then I caught a cab and headed uptown toward Jerry's place. We had quite an evening, and I rolled in just as George Prime was starting the car, business suit and briefcase, ready for work. I slipped into the garage. Hey, hold it, hold it.
Oh, you're back.
How'd it go, huh? Whew, Well, you didn't tell me you were married to a female Bengal tiger. Well, she didn't suspect, did she? Oh, of course not. Well, what'd you do? Well, fought till about 1 a.m., then went to our respective corners and sulked. You think you can handle it? Listen, she's really a sweet girl underneath. Now, I'll be so attentive and sweet, she'll soften up. You wait and see. Well, don't overdo it. She is my wife, you know. Naturally. Now, you're sure you understand the recall signal? Perfectly. When you buzz the recall, I wait for the first logical opportunity to join you, and then you take over. Right, right, right. Now, climb into the trunk here, and I'll shut you off and lock you in. Righto. Well, I'll see you tonight, old man.
I'll see you tonight, George.
I could go on at some length about my exploits, but I won't. In the end, it was like buying a three-dimension TV set. After a week or two, the novelty starts to wear off. Well, I got it down to where Tuesday and Thursday nights, I was informally out while formally in. The rest of the time, George Prime was in the box. Well, Marge didn't suspect a thing. In fact, George Prime was having a remarkable effect on her.
Oh, that you, George?
Yeah.
Hello. Oh, you look tired. Have a hard day?
Well, now that you mention it, yeah, I did. Yeah.
Well, why don't you sit down and relax? I fixed a martini before dinner.
That sounds like a splendid idea. Are you all right?
I'm fine. Why?
Nothing.
Well, what are you looking at?
Are you? You've done something to your hair or something.
You like it?
Yes. You know, I've always thought you were a darn beautiful woman.
Well, thank you, Mr. Fairclough. You know, you're not so bad yourself since you stopped scowling and snapping.
I guess that's a compliment, huh?
George, isn't it about time we stopped clawing each other?
It's what I've always wanted, Mark.
So have I. Well, you've changed so much recently.
What changed?
Well, you know, you've been less irritable and more considerate and so much more vital. Oh, you know what I mean.
Yes, I'm afraid I do.
George.
Yeah?
Look, let's have dinner and some wine and spend a nice evening together, like we used to when we were first married.
Why, sounds fine. Holy smokes. Hey, what time is it?
It's 7:30. Why?
Well, listen, I have to run down to the corner for some tobacco. I wouldn't want to spend a relaxing evening without tobacco, you know.
But there's some in your holder.
Well, I want something fresh. You chill the wine. I won't be a minute.
All right, dear, and hurry back.
I'd forgotten all about my date with Jerry. Actually, I didn't want to keep it. The idea of spending a quiet evening with Marge was really appealing for a change. But I had to run over and explain to Jerry, so I sent George Prime in to keep Marge company till I got back, which was about midnight. As I walked down the path, I looked in the window. George Prime was there, and he was kissing my wife the way I hadn't kissed her in years, and she wasn't exactly fighting him off either. I almost wore off my thumb on that recall button before he came out to the garage.
Are you there, George? It's me, G.P.
Well, it's about time. I'm sorry, old man. Sorry. Look, I saw what was going on in there. Well, you know, old bean, I am a super deluxe model. I should say you are. First thing tomorrow, big boy, I'm taking you in to have your circuits rewired. Look, aren't you being a little overly jealous? No, I mean for a man who wanted to get rid of his wife. I never said that. Well, I could never understand it personally. Listen. She's the one who's going to be suspicious if I don't get back there. Now, you give me that dressing gown and you get back in that box. Tomorrow morning, back to the factory. Marge was waiting for me. And one of those flimsy things that I'd given her when we were first married. I must say she looked so charming and lovely that my heart just melted. And still I was overwhelmed with a sense of guilt and I wanted to tell her what I'd done.
You finally got back. I thought you'd never get here.
Oh, my. You look ravishing.
That's the idea.
Marge, listen, I've got to tell you something. And before I do, I want you to know that in spite of the The cat I've been, I do love you. I always have.
I know that. And you don't have to tell me anything.
Oh, this is important. And it'll shock you. In fact, you may never speak to me.
I know what you're going to tell me.
You mean?
About George Prime.
Great Scott, you knew.
Well, of course, George. Now, you don't think I could be fooled by something out of the lab, do you?
You've known all along?
All along.
Oh, Marge. Then tomorrow morning, we'll send that stuff dummy back to the factory. And then we'll live the way we've always wanted.
Oh, yes, dearest. The way we've always wanted.
I just don't know where to begin.
Then why not begin by just kissing me?
I kissed her tenderly, and her lips were softer and more responsive than I've ever known them. Yes, she'd certainly changed. I turned out the lamp. I ran my fingers through her fragrant, tawny hair. My thumb stopped at a little depression behind her ear. And then suddenly, I knew what had happened. It was a turnoff switch, of course. And I, George Faircloth, was now married to Marge Prime.
X-1 has brought you Prime Difference, written by Alan E. Norse and adapted for radio by George Lefferts. Featured in our cast were Lawson Zerbe as George and George Prime, Anne Loring as Marge, Evelyn Juster as Jerry, Merrill Joels as the salesman, and John Thomas as Harry. This is Fred Collins. X-1 was directed by George Gutsos and is an NBC Radio Network production.
We pause now for station identification.